You're quite passionate on the subject. Have you ever thought about running for office? The only way I'd run is in the opposite direction. She laughed. Jack was smitten. Liliana was lovely and intelligent and had a good sense of humor. But he nearly got his head shot off last year by falling for another beauty back in Bosnia-Herzegovina. And then there was Isabel. So tell me, Mr. Ryan, how do you plan on looking into Mr. Stepinski's businesses if he's not around? Well, we can just show up in Krakow and start asking around and try to find out what we can. We might get lucky right away. Or it might take several hours, or even days. Hell, weeks. Jack searched Liliana's face for a reaction, but there wasn't one. Or, he offered. Or? If you want to get back to your case assignments and get me out of your hair, maybe you can access your public tax records and get us some addresses. Who says I want you out of my hair? Her blonde hair danced in the wind rushing in from the cracked window, and her eyes locked with his. A familiar tingle ran up and down Jack's spine. Flirting? Maybe. Or maybe a test. Nice deflection. How about it? We're not on official ABW business. You don't know that. We already have a tie into Ostbek, which is operating on Polish soil and is already suspected of something that might have gotten a German BKA agent killed. I'm not asking for anything that isn't publicly available or that requires a warrant. I just don't have access to Polish tax records, and my Polish is about as good as my Martian. That cracked another smile. Okay, I'll call my boss and get approval. Might go faster if you didn't. She glanced over at him. Never kid a kidder, Mr. Ryan. He flashed a boyish smile. Wouldn't dare try. Charming, witty, manipulative. Are you quite sure you're not a politician? Me? Oh, hell no. Liliana shook her head, hardly believing she had fallen for Jack's blarney. She spoke to the Audi's MMI, multimedia interface, and a number pulled up. Jack pretended not to listen, but he was, since the two women were chatting it up in Polish over the Audi's amazing sound system. He didn't understand a word, but so far so good. Chapter 36. 20 minutes later, Liliana's phone chirped with a text message and a file from a friend in the Polish tax office. She opened up the file and read it. "We have a list of places to visit," she said. "Perfect. How many?" "4, not counting his house. Hopefully we can knock them out quickly." "You're in a hurry to get back home?" "I have a lot going on." He wasn't in the mood to tell her about Corey's promise. "A woman?" Jack shook his head, smiling. "Hardly." "Oh, more than one? Are you kidding? I don't have time for a pet goldfish." "Never married? No kids?" "Someday. On both counts, I hope." "Family is important." "The most important," Jack said. "Everything comes from that." "Your father was good to you growing up." "Yeah, the best." "Yours?" "The finest man I ever knew." "Then you were a lucky woman." Jack felt something stirring inside him. He admired her loyalty. She was a very impressive woman. Time to change the subject. "Can I ask you a question?"
"Sure."
Mr. Vilcek wasn't exactly a warm and cuddly teddy bear, especially when we first met him. But after you mentioned your great uncle, he softened up. What was that all about?
"Do you know World War II history very well?"
"Mostly the American version of it. My grandfather fought the Germans as a paratrooper with 101st Airborne Division."
"My great-uncle's name was Witold Pilecki. His story is really the story of Poland. If you understand him and what kind of a man he was, then you understand the heart of the Polish people."
She stopped herself.
I don't want to bore you. No, please. Tell me about him. His active military career began after World War I, when he started fighting the invading Bolshevik armies charging west. Wait, remind me again. I'm a little fuzzy on that period. After the Bolsheviks defeated the counter-revolutionary White Armies in the Russian Civil War, Lenin and the other Bolsheviks saw their opportunity to invade Europe. The Allied armies were exhausted, and the Axis armies defeated. Lenin ordered Trotsky and Stalin to conquer the West with a Red Army of 800,000 men and 30,000 horses. They could have swept away every Western government and created a Red Communist Empire from the Pacific to the Atlantic. Except for one problem. An army of barefoot Poles under Marshal Pilsudski stopped them at the gates of Warsaw in 1920. We call it the Miracle on the Vistula. It is the greatest battle of the 20th century that no one outside of Poland has ever heard of. Jack didn't remember reading about any of that in his history courses. And that wasn't the first time Poland saved Western civilization either, Liliana said. Enlighten me. In 1683, the Ottoman Empire was marching across Europe undefeated and driving toward Vienna, which they surrounded and besieged with 200,000 troops. But the Polish King Sobieski amassed a relief force, and though greatly outnumbered, he led the winged hussars in a charge that smashed the Turks and saved Vienna. Wait, I remember now. The winged hussars were badasses. Heavy armor polished bright, 19-foot-long lances and poles strapped on their backs with eagle feathers that whistled like Stukas when they rode into battle. Were it not for King Sobieski and the Polish hussars, all of Europe might well have fallen to the Muslim invasion. The Ottoman Empire was never a threat to the Christian West again. I suppose as a Westerner and a Christian, I should thank you. Twice. Or perhaps three times. Three. Polish mathematicians broke the German Enigma code just before World War II and passed it along to the British, with instructions to Turing on how to build the electromechanical components of his code-breaking machine. I had no idea. So finish the story about your great-uncle. He fought very bravely, both at the front and also behind enemy lines during the Polish-Soviet War, and was twice awarded the Cross of Valor. He sounds like a stud. He was only just getting started. Between the two world wars, he established a cavalry training school and later commanded a cavalry squadron. He fought the Germans when they invaded on the 1st of September 1939, and then turned around and fought the Soviets, who invaded on the 17th of September. His unit was defeated by the communists, so he fled to Warsaw and co-founded the secret Polish army under German occupation. Did he survive the war? While still one of the commanders of the Polish underground, he heard rumors there was something horrible taking place in a camp called Auschwitz near Krakow. You know it, of course. Horrific. Inhuman. At the time, most people thought it was just another POW camp. My uncle knew the only way to find out the truth was to get himself arrested and imprisoned there. Wait, are you saying he intentionally broke into a Nazi concentration camp? Yes. Was he Jewish? No, he was a Christian. But he was a human being, wasn't he? And he died in the camp? No. Once he got inside the camp, he organized the resistance movement and also began writing reports that made their way back to London, detailing the atrocities and trying to convince the Allies to join forces with the Polish underground to liberate the camp. But Churchill and the others didn't believe him and refused to do it. That sucks. What was Pilecki's response? He escaped in order to help organize the Polish underground forces to liberate it. But they were too weak to do so. And even though the Russians were close enough to offer military support, they refused to help as well. How long had he been in Auschwitz? just under 3 years. Most people didn't survive 6 months. And after his escape, he fought in the Warsaw Uprising. Remember, Stalin refused to cross the Vistula to help them, and 16,000 Polish fighters were massacred by the Germans so that Russians could take control of Poland after the war.
Sounds like the Russians have never been friends to the Polish people either. My great uncle would have agreed. He was finally captured by the Germans after the uprising, but was liberated from his POW camp by the American army. He returned home after the war, only to find that the West had given Poland to Russia, and now the Russians were the occupiers. Naturally, my great uncle had to join the resistance movement against the Soviet communists, especially after he began to investigate the Katyn Forest massacre. That was during the phony war, wasn't it? Yes. In 1940, the Russians murdered 25,000 Polish soldiers and intellectuals in the Katyn Forest and buried them there. Stalin lied about it and blamed the Nazis. The Russians eventually captured my great uncle for his efforts. They tortured him and then murdered him after a show trial in 1948, then buried him in an unmarked grave. It wasn't until the fall of communism in Poland that Witold Pilecki's story was finally told to the whole world, though people who knew him personally knew it well. Like Mr. Vilcek. He told me his grandfather fought alongside my great uncle against the Germans and even saved his grandfather's life. Jack shook his head. I understand now when you say that history isn't just a school subject for you, but a daily reality. Which is perhaps why I talk too much about it. Sorry. Nothing to apologize for. It's fascinating and painful all at the same time. You must be very proud of your family. A family's name and a family's honor is everything, don't you think? No question. They were tooling along a southbound two-lane now. The road was fairly busy, mostly with passenger vehicles, but quite a few commercial ones as well, traveling in both directions. You mentioned before that you appreciated the fact my country wants to put a military base in Poland outside of NATO commitments. Is that because you don't trust France and Germany to come to your aid against another Russian invasion? Sort of like the phony war? Would you? When have they ever lived up to their NATO commitments? The French and the Germans couldn't save us from a Russian invasion, even if they wanted to. But you'd trust us to come to your aid. I trust President Ryan, yes. She smiled. Your Congress? Not so much. I'm sorry you feel that way. Am I wrong to do so? Jack shook his head. I'm even sorrier you're right. Liliana slapped him on the shoulder. Hey. Don't think we Poles don't love America. We do. You know our country disappeared from all of the European maps for over 123 years, right? We were divided up and absorbed by the Austro-Hungarian, Russian, and German empires until 1918. But it was President Wilson who insisted after World War I that Poland be allowed to be a country again. That's why we're celebrating our 100th anniversary this year. We love America, and we know we can rely on you whenever it really counts. So long as President Ryan has anything to say about it. Yeah, you can count on us for sure.
Chapter 37 Krakow, Poland. Jack and Liliana hit traffic on the two-lane road on the north side of the city. Traffic was heavy in both directions. It was hard to believe that a city of nearly 800,000 residents had such small roads. But then again, Poland appeared to have a lot more public transportation than the United States did. On this side of town, at least, there weren't any skyscrapers. Mostly low apartment buildings, homes, and businesses. Everything was neat and clean, as it had been in Warsaw. Maybe more so. The architecture had changed somewhat. Jack knew he was about as close to Budapest in the south and Vienna in the southwest as he was to Warsaw in the north. So perhaps it was the influence of the Austro-Hungarian Empire he was feeling. Everything looks neat and clean here. I take it Krakow was destroyed during the war too, and then rebuilt? The city was last destroyed during the Mongol invasion in the 13th century. The Nazis felt Krakow was the most German-like city in Poland, so they preserved it. They even ran their wartime administration from here instead of Warsaw. There is a great deal of history here, including German history, which the Germans admire most of all. There were just 5 addresses and income tax statements on the list sent by Liliana's friend at the tax office, and Liliana had already marked them on Google Maps. "So where do you want to start?" Liliana asked. "The most interesting place, his house." "I was hoping you'd say that." Liliana followed the ring road west, then south, avoiding the city center. They crossed the wide Vistula River and headed farther south. Without the onboard navigation, Liliana admitted, she would have had a hard time finding Stepinski's neighborhood, located on the edge of a protected forest. The homes here were larger than most, with distinctly alpine features and situated on large, heavily wooded private lots. From an American perspective, it had a middle-class feel. But Liliana assured him that the average working person could never afford these properties. The woman's voice in the Audi's MMI console directed them onto a gravel road cutting through a stand of trees, which they followed around an S-curve. A 2-story house stood on the crest of a small hill, new construction, to judge from the remnants of fresh lumber and paint buckets stacked neatly to one side. A tallish man, balding and bearded, tossed Toomey luggage into the back of a brand-new grape-colored Mercedes G-Class, a square-shaped SUV that Jack's dad referred to as a high-dollar Tonka truck. The man's round gut bulged beneath an Adidas-branded turquoise and black tracksuit, with the famous 3 white stripes running the length of his sleeves. But it was the 2 big black-and-tan Rottweilers in the yard that caught their attention. Or was it the other way around? The 2 thickly muscled guard dogs barked as they charged in a flash of snarling teeth toward the Audi at full speed. The man set his bags down in the grass, squinting behind his glasses at the silver Audi rolling up his driveway. Liliana hit the brakes and slammed the car into park just as the enormous forepaws of the black and tan monsters slammed onto the driver's side glass, their massive jaws snapping and snarling, fogging the window with their hot breath and saliva. Liliana reached into her coat pocket to grab her pistol, but a sharp whistle from the man outside yanked them away as if they had been jerked by leashes. Their stubby tails wagged furiously as they charged back toward their master and dropped to a sitting position on either side of him in perfect synchronicity. The man smiled. Liliana turned to Jack. "Shall we?" "So long as you've got that pistol, I'm good." She hit the unlock button and the 2 of them emerged from the Audi, opening the doors slowly. They approached, careful not to make any sudden or threatening moves. The 2 male Rotties were each easily 100 pounds of raw muscle and slashing teeth, descended from a breed of dog first brought to the region by Roman legions 2 millennia earlier. "Mr. Ryan, I assume," the man said. "Mr. Stepinski," Jack said. The man didn't offer a hand. Neither did Jack. Stepinski turned to Liliana. "And you must be Ms. Pilecki."
"I am."
"Pavel was quite impressed with you, according to my secretary. I can see why."
"He is a nice man."
Stepinski laughed.
"Nice? I've heard him called a lot of things, but never nice. One evening not so long ago, we went out to a pub and he got roaring drunk. A young idiot insulted his wife. And a minute later, Pavel threw him against the plate glass window. Fortunately, the glass didn't break, or else the man would have been shredded like a cabbage."
"That sounds very gallant," Liliana said.
"It might have been, except that Pavel has never been married. So, how can I help the 2 of you? Something about an investment?"
Jack shot a quick glance at the panting dogs, their eyes fixed on him. He handed Stepinski his business card, hoping his arm wouldn't be snapped in 2 by a pair of anxious jaws. "I'm an analyst with Hendley Associates, a private equity firm. We're looking for investment opportunities in Poland, and more importantly, partnerships with well-managed local businesses." Sapinski held the card with two hands, pinched between his thumbs and index fingers, straining to read it through his thick lenses.
I've not heard of your firm, I'm sorry. He handed the card back to Jack. Keep it, please.
Sapinski shoved the card into his pocket as if it were a dirty Kleenex. Jack continued. We're one of the most successful private equity and investment firms in the United States. We're looking to expand overseas.
You were wise to pick Poland. Our economy is booming, and we are in the heart of Europe. But I'd like to know, of all of the thousands of companies in Poland, how did you happen to pick mine as a target of opportunity?
Research, Mr. Sapinski. That's what I do.
As a skilled researcher, you must have discovered that I have no need of any investors.
You mean any new investors, don't you?
To whom are you referring?
I believe Baltic General Services has recently partnered with you, providing cash and other services to bolster your enterprise.
What of it?
Did they buy you out? 50-50 ownership?
I'm not inclined to discuss my arrangements, but tell me, what is it about my company that interests you so?
That's what we'd like to talk to you about if you have a few minutes.
As you can see, I'm packing to leave for a long vacation.
Somewhere fun, I hope.
It's really none of your business, is it?
Sapinski lifted another bag into the trunk. It will only take a few minutes of your time, and I think you'll be glad you did.
You assume a lot.
I assume $10 million is worth your time.
Sapinski's eyes widened at the number.
And that's how much I have to invest. Today, if possible.
I suppose I can spare a few minutes.
Please, won't you come inside?
Gotcha.
They sat on a green leather couch in Sapinski's library, its newly built shelves bulging with books, mostly paperbacks. The covers were pristine, as if the books were unread. The English language titles were business texts and literary classics. The same with the Russian. The Polish book titles he couldn't read, but he assumed they were the same.
May I? Jack asked, pointing at one of the shelves near his desk.
If you must, Sapinski said, annoyed, as he tamped sweet-smelling tobacco into the bowl of his Italian briarwood pipe. Jack lifted a copy of Hemingway's For Whom the Bell Tolls off the shelf.
Great book. Love the movie. Have you seen it?
Many times. Bergman is a dream, Sapinski said, lighting his pipe.
But the actress who played Pilar stole the show.
What was her name?
I haven't the slightest.
Sapinski's attention turned to his young live-in maid as she entered the room with a tray. The Ukrainian girl brought in cups of instant coffee and Biscoff cookies, still in their plastic wrappers. Jack returned the book to its shelf as Sapinski dismissed the girl with a flick of his hand.
I love these cookies, Liliana said. They usually serve these on airplanes.
Sapinski released a cloud of blue smoke, then offered an oily smile.
We are the exclusive Biscoff distributors in Poland.
Impressive. Jack took a seat next to Liliana. Sapinski pointed at the coffee and cookies.
Please, help yourselves.
Thank you. Jack took a sip of the weak coffee. Sapinski folded his long fingers together and leaned forward on his desk, his pipe clenched firmly between his yellowed teeth.
So, Mr. Ryan, what is it exactly you are proposing?
Chapter 38.
Did that go as you expected? Liliana asked as she pulled out of Stepinski's curving driveway.
1 second, Jack said, putting AirPods in his ears. I need to check something. He punched a speed dial number, careful to hide the screen from Liliana's peripheral vision. A ring later, the call connected to the listening device Jack had planted on Stepinski's bookshelf. He'd likely never find it, because Jack placed it behind a book the man had clearly never read. In fact, most of the books on his shelf looked unread. They were probably all for show, to impress any visitors. Jack listened for a moment, smiled. That didn't take long, he told himself. Sapinski was already on the phone with someone and speaking in English, so no translation was needed. The call was being recorded on his phone in case he wanted to listen to it again later.
Something funny? Liliana asked as she turned onto the narrow asphalt road heading back toward Krakow.
Jack hit the pause button. Just a voicemail from work. I'll be with you in a second. He hit play and listened to the rest of the message.
He wanted to know if I was seeking an investment partner. Of course I told him I wasn't, but he insisted on making his case.
Of course.
Of course not. I will let you know if he contacts me again.
Yes. Right away.
Goodbye, Mr. Gage.
Gotcha again, Jack said. At least that was a confirmation that Gage and Stepinski knew each other. Not that it meant anything substantial, and it certainly didn't connect any dots to Senator Dixon. But who knows? Maybe they would have a more interesting conversation later. If so, the automated bug would pick it up and transmit it to Jack's phone.
What? Liliana asked.
Whoops.
Jack closed the app and pulled out his AirPods, saying, "Oh, nothing important, just something from work."
So did your meeting with Stepinski go the way you planned?
Absolutely.
But he didn't say or offer you anything,
which is exactly what I expected.
Of course, the meeting had pissed him off. He couldn't stand Stepinski's smug, nouveau riche arrogance, which was a real tell. Most people crumbled when they came into a lot of money quickly, especially money that wasn't earned. The problem wasn't the money. Fast cash only amplified existing character faults. Stepinski was probably always an arrogant, self-interested son of a bitch, but now he could afford to not hide it, nor his obvious greed. Just waving the possibility of an easy $10 million was enough to get Jack and Liliana past the Baskerville hounds and into the Baskerville house.
Then what was the purpose of the meeting?
Liliana drove through a stand of trees on either side of the narrow lane. It looked like some kind of a park or nature preserve.
That's a great question.
It really was. Jack knew that his answer would determine his immediate future. Either a chance at cracking open whatever nut Christopher Gage had put together, or a stint of jail time in a Polish prison cell. It all depended on how far he could trust Liliana, or if he could trust her at all.
His dad taught him years ago that reading people was one of life's most important skills. His dad claimed he could assess someone's character within 60 seconds of meeting them. Until Bosnia, Jack might have thought he possessed the same skill. Now he wasn't so sure. And now he found himself in yet another vehicle, in another foreign country, with another beautiful woman, who also possessed a pistol that could blow his brains out. Aida had given it her best shot. Would Liliana?
Are you asking me as a friend or as an agent of the ABW?
Oh, she smiled. I didn't realize we were friends.
Aren't we?
We've only known each other for a few hours.
Is there some sort of minimum number of hours required for Polish friendship? Maybe a certificate I need to acquire?
How about lunch, and we'll discuss the details.
You read my mind.
Perfect. I know just the place.
Krakow, Poland. Hutnia Udorety exuded both old-world charm and modern sensibility, with its exposed brick walls, terrazzo tile floors, and white linen tablecloths. It was definitely a place for locals, and served food family style.
The hostess greeted Liliana with a kiss, and the two caught up on recent history in a flurry of words Jack couldn't possibly follow, even if he spoke Polish. Liliana introduced him to her friend, and she greeted him with classroom-perfect English, but not without shooting a quick, conspiratorial glance at her friend, which Liliana quickly dismissed with a curt shake of her head.
Women.
The hostess ushered them downstairs to a private table away from the other lunchtime guests and left menus with them.
Hungry? Liliana asked.
Jack picked up a menu.
Starved. I'm not really into airplane cookies.
Me neither. What a penny-pinching asshole.
Have I mentioned how good your English is?
Have you ever had Polish food before?
Besides ponchki?
No.
Then you're in for a real treat. Do you mind if I order for you?
Please. 15 minutes later, plates of food began landing on the white linen tablecloth like FA-18F Super Hornets on a carrier deck. They split each plate. Liliana narrated as Jack tucked in.
Burachki, Liliana said, pointing at a plate of shredded beet salad. A good place to start.
Jack agreed. The salad was cold and refreshing, and not sweetly pickled after the American fashion.
Next, golubki.
Liliana smiled as Jack dove into the cabbage rolls. Rectangles, really. The leaves as thin and translucent as parchment paper, stuffed with minced chicken, pork, and rice, and topped with a tomato gravy.
Unbelievable.
Jack took another sip of a strong local porter, smooth and potent at 9.8% alcohol content.
Outstanding.
The next plate arrived. Bigas. Very traditional. She explained it was a stew made with sauerkraut, not bitter like the German kind, and meat, sausage, pork, and bacon, all sautéed together with onions, garlic, paprika, and other spices. She was right. The flavor of the sauerkraut was more tangy than sour, and paired perfectly with the protein. His only concern was that he was already starting to fill up. Now for my favorite here. Blatsky zemlechana z gulashem.
Easy for you to say, Jack said, enjoying his porter. It was so good he seriously considered ordering a second one, but knew if he did that Liliana would have to fireman carry him up the stairs and pour him into the back seat of her Audi.
Liliana pushed the plate toward him. Potato pancakes and goulash, though not goulash the way the Hungarians do it. The fried potato pancakes were large and thick and smothered in chunks of buttery soft pork bathed in yet another rich tomato sauce, and topped with a dollop of fresh sour cream. His stomach told him he was topping off, but his taste buds begged him to keep shoveling until the plate was clean. His taste buds won the argument. Another wash of dark porter almost emptied the glass and took up the last remaining centimeters of available space in his gullet. There was no more room at the inn. Until the dessert arrived.
Ratsuke, Liliana said. Apple pancakes.
Thick and hearty and dusted with powdered sugar. Jack dipped each savory bite into a ramekin, spilling over with raspberry and cream sauce. Jack forked the last bite into his mouth and lifted his white napkin in surrender. He did a quick calculation. He would need to do approximately 30,000 crunches to match the caloric content of this meal. And it would be worth it.
Check, please.
How do you do it? Jack asked, standing on the sidewalk of the narrow, tree-lined street outside the restaurant.
Do what?
Eat what you eat and look like you do.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Jack felt the heat rush to his face. I mean, you must have one heck of a metabolism.
The trick is to not eat like that every meal, like most Americans do. And exercise, of course.
I could use a gym right about now.
How about a walk instead? Two of Stepinski's properties are within 20 minutes of here.
Let's do it.
Good.
It will be a chance to show you some of the old town. Liliana led them north toward the center of Old Town. The air was damp and cool, but pleasant. Jack was grateful to stretch his legs. He'd spent the better part of the last 16 hours on his rear end. The part of the city you're in now is called Kazimierz. It's the old Jewish quarter. King Kazimierz the Great reigned in the 14th century during another time in Europe when Jews were being persecuted. He offered them sanctuary in Poland, where they prospered for centuries, until the Second World War. Sadly, there are few Jews here now. In recent years, Kazimierz has revitalized. There are many art galleries, restaurants, craft beer brewers, and hipsters. It's my favorite part of the city. The streets became more crowded with pedestrians, and especially tourists, the closer they got to Old City Center. When they finally reached the main square, one of the largest medieval squares in Europe, the place was packed with milling tourists admiring the soaring steeple of St. Mary's Basilica dominating the center, and across from it, the Cloth Hall, a hub of international trade since the time of the Renaissance, Liliana informed him. Promise me you'll hire a local guide next time you're here, Jack.
Wawel Castle is a short distance away, but it is the heart of Poland, our Westminster Cathedral, where our great kings and queens are buried. Colorful horse-drawn carriages stood in line, waiting for passengers near the cathedral, and the cafes and coffee houses surrounding the square were packed with gawking tourists, many of them Chinese, judging by the conversations Jack heard walking past them. 10 minutes later, they stood on a narrow side street north of the main square, facing a small two-story building. The first floor was gray and was occupied by a grocery store. The second floor was beige. Stepinski owns the entire building, according to the property tax records. He collects rent from two residential units on the second level and from the grocery on the first, according to his income tax statements. He doesn't own the grocery. No. Is the rent money substantial? Decent. Enough to buy a brand new six-figure Mercedes. That G-Class still had paper plates on the bumper. Perhaps he is frugal in other areas of his life. Like coffee and dessert? Liliana snorted. You are too funny. Jack stepped inside the modest grocery. Its plain white tile floors, bare fluorescent bulbs, and two cash registers didn't impress. It was minuscule by American standards. A few aisles, a half dozen patrons. The two long walls were well stocked with a wide variety of local and imported beers and wine, as well as vodkas and whiskeys. Anything else you need to see, Jack? No. Let's check out the next place. Chapter 39. From the grocery store, Jack and Liliana headed east on foot, crossing through a narrow band of urban park and walkways that circled most of the old town. They headed south down a busy four-lane street, Westerplatte, passing, among other things, a Dominican convent. They eventually arrived in front of a formal neoclassical four-story residential building on a very quiet and pleasant tree-lined street. An electronic passkey was required to gain entrance, but an elderly couple exited and took no notice of Jack and Liliana passing through the half-open door. The building was quiet, save for the sound of an energetic but well-played violin on one of the top floors, and the happy laughter of small children behind the nearest of two doors on the first floor. The names on the mailboxes were all Polish. The ancient marble floors were clean, the dark wood doors and fixtures polished, and the air tobacco-free. Four floors, two apartments each. Stepinski owns the entire building, Liliana offered in a soft voice. Doesn't look like a drug den or a terrorist training camp, does it? Is that what you're looking for? Not exactly. Liliana frowned. Are you sure you're a financial analyst? I wouldn't want my investors to get caught up in anything illegal. Of course not. Anything else to see here? No. A 15-minute walk led back to Liliana's Audi. She drove them to the last two stops. The first was a cubbyhole of a liquor store. Alcohola, the sign read. Not much bigger than a phone booth, attached to a chain grocery store 10 minutes from the apartment building. There was barely room for Jack to poke his head in and look around, trying to avoid the hard stare of the disheveled man behind the tiny glass counter. Every nook and cranny was crammed with hard liquors and spirits, especially flavored vodkas, and Irish and American whiskies, and most of those in bottles small enough to fit in a pocket or purse. The last stop was equally unremarkable, Krakow Candy, a small shop offering a wide variety of boxed and packaged candies, imported and domestic. Stepinski owns the shop. My guess is that he would make more money renting the place out, judging by the net income he declared, Liliana said. Now what? Liliana said as she unlocked the car. Back to Warsaw. Any place in particular? Drop me off at my hotel if you don't mind. I'll try and pull something together tonight and we'll hit it again tomorrow. As you wish. They headed back north toward Warsaw on the S7, the way they had arrived. The sky darkened about the time they left the city limits, and 20 minutes later rain spattered the windshield, the wipers completely out of sync with the Dave Brubeck album Liliana had pulled up on her audio system.
Jack stifled his third yawn in as many miles. I have a hard time with jet lag, too, Liliana said. Grab a nap if you want. Thanks, but I'll push through it. Otherwise, I'll be fighting it the whole time. The traffic had thinned out quite a bit heading in this direction. How long do you think you'll be in Poland? A week? A month? No telling. So, what do you think of my country? So far, I'm impressed. Your economy is doing much better than I realized. It is. We're trying to grow in every area, especially manufactured goods, and trying to expand our exports. What do you think about the Belt and Road Initiative? Liliana shook her head. I'm worried about it. The idea sounds good on paper. Opening trade routes between China and Europe should benefit everyone. But in reality, what we see is a lot of Chinese manufactured goods being dumped into our markets, and what we're mostly exporting to them is pork and dairy products. And the Chinese don't exactly play fair, do they? You should know. Look at the massive trade deficits your country runs with them. I'm surprised you follow international trade patterns. Why? Because I'm in law enforcement. Trust me, we talk about these things all the time in our department. Why? Have you kept up with the news? There are riots and demonstrations all over Europe these days. Youth unemployment is over 40% in Greece, more than 30% in Italy and Spain, and nearly 20% in Portugal. Their manufacturing sectors were crushed in the last recession, and they've never fully recovered. And they won't, if Chinese imports keep flooding in. You're saying that subsidized Chinese imports are contributing to European instability? Absolutely. Without jobs, what will young people do? What kind of a future will they have? And look at how Europe is dividing right now. The countries with the worst youth unemployment, Greece, Spain, and Portugal, have radical socialist governments. That's the wrong direction for Europe to take. So how do you feel about foreign investment in your country? You mean like Hendley Associates? Liliana smiled. To name one outstanding financial firm, yes. Investments that grow my economy, I can support. Anything that creates jobs and wealth in Poland is good for Poland. But the purpose of so-called free trade seems to be to make a few individuals and corporations rich at the expense of the rest of the country. Importing cheap foreign goods means exporting Polish jobs, and that isn't sustainable in the long run. I agree. But the world is running in the opposite direction. Globalism is the trend. Yes, it is. But we are at a critical crossroads, don't you think? How so? Ironically, in the name of free trade, government power is becoming more centralized in order to erase borders and eliminate national sovereignty. But if we lose our national identity, what good does it do to belong to the European Union? If Polish people become more prosperous, wouldn't it be worth it? But will they? What happens when power is centralized? Do you think the largest German and French corporations will allow Brussels to let Polish corporations grow at their expense? Or do you think it will be the other way around? Not in theory. Tell me, you studied history. What happens when big corporations partner with big government? The rich get richer, and the politicians get more power. Fascism and socialism are the same things. Liliana cursed herself under her breath. I'm sorry to keep talking this way. It's not polite. I don't mind, really. It's fascinating. You must remember, my country disappeared from the map for 123 years. Occupiers wouldn't allow Polish to be taught in our schools, or for our children to learn their own history. Same with the Nazis. We had to fight to keep our identity and our culture and our language. We don't want to give it all away for the sake of cheap toaster ovens and Chinese takeout, even though I happen to love Kung Pao chicken. Jack pointed at a pair of flashing lights on the road up ahead. An elderly woman stood in the rain without an umbrella, trying and failing to pull out a spare tire from her trunk. Poor thing. I'll call for help, Liliana said.
Pull over. I can handle it. But it's raining.
What if nobody shows up?
Okay.
Liliana pulled in behind the woman's rusted sedan, a Volkswagen Jetta. She turned around, squinting against the thick drops pelting her concerned face. Liliana and Jack jumped out and dashed over to the woman. Liliana identified herself as an agent of the Polish government, and that Jack was her American friend. Or so Jack assumed. He didn't wait around for the formalities. He was getting soaked, too. The old woman insisted on showing Jack what to do, and Liliana kept trying to wrestle her under the mini umbrella she had. She finally convinced the woman to come sit in the Audi while Jack finished the job. 15 minutes after they'd pulled over, the woman's spare tire was attached and Jack was soaked from head to foot, slathered in mud, but satisfied with his work. The rain had stopped. The old woman thanked Jack profusely in a spate of Polish that Liliana hastily translated, then climbed back into her car. She stomped the gas and sped away, throwing a rooster tail of mud that splattered all over the two of them. All they could do was laugh. Liliana opened the trunk of the Audi and fished out an emergency blanket. The two of them toweled off as best they could, climbed back into the Audi, and headed for Warsaw. Liliana cranked up the heat. 20 minutes later, Jack was sound asleep, snoring his head off. Chapter 40. San Francisco, California. Watson put her desk phone on speaker as it rang. Four rings in, Elias Dom finally picked up.
Hello, Amanda. To what do I owe the pleasure?
I was checking my calendar and I saw that I hadn't received the text for your speech yet, so I can review it. The sound of gusting wind battered the phone speaker.
My speech?
The Tech World Conference. Remember? It's 2 weeks away.
Oh, yes, sure. Sorry. My mind is somewhere else.
By the sound of it, so is your body. Where are you?
I'm standing in front of the Wickenburg Chamber of Commerce building. It's quite charming. The whole town is charming. Straight out of an episode of Lassie. Do you know what I'm looking at?
Wickenburg where?
Wickenburg, Arizona. So can you guess what I'm looking at?
Watson wanted to scream obscenities at him. He was a genius and a great lay, but mostly he was a precocious, self-centered man-child.
I haven't a clue. A Texas Longhorn. It's standing on top of the building across the street. It's plastic, I'm sure.
Fascinating. Is that why you're in Wackenburg?
Wickenburg.
Wickenburg, Arizona? To look at cows standing on buildings?
Didn't I tell you I was flying out here today?
Of course not.
It's not on your calendar. There's a tract of land I've had my eye on not too far from here. 32,000 acres. Perfect for a solar farm.
Solar farm? I thought we weren't walking down that road again.
Like many of Elias Dom's brilliant ideas, solar farming was both the wave of the future and an economic boondoggle. CloudServe had previously owned two other solar farms, and both had nearly bankrupted the company. Elias's idea was to power all of the company's vast server farms with solar energy and sell the excess electricity produced back to the utility companies, making both a profit and effectively providing free electricity to CloudServe. Unfortunately, the cost of solar energy per kilowatt hour was prohibitively high, even when subsidized, and a poor price alternative to fossil fuels, particularly oil, which had plummeted in price in recent years, thanks to technological advances in oil sands and shale production. Worse, the Ryan administration had successfully lobbied to end subsidies for the solar industry. The CloudServe board liquidated both money-losing solar projects over Dom's objections. Things change, Amanda. Board members change. Markets change. The climate changes. But the sun never changes. It's the perfect energy source, and it's free. We need to be part of the solar revolution. Her jaw clenched. She had neither the time nor the energy to rehash the debate. It was just another goose in the flock of wild geese Elias Dom endlessly chased. All of their feasibility studies indicated that another solar energy investment would be a net-net loser for the company. even with federal subsidies that no longer existed. But Elias Dom was an obstinate, relentless dreamer. She wasn't going to win this argument.
Can't wait to hear all about it when you get back. But in the meantime, I need you to remember that we have a lot riding on this London conference. It's the most important media event of the year for us.
I shouldn't think we'd have much trouble generating media attention. Elias had appeared on both the cover of Fast Company and the Joe Rogan podcast in the last week.
I'm talking about the good kind. You know, the kind that makes us money. These are industry people I'm talking about. People who sign contracts. That means we have a lot of hands to shake and a lot of egos to stroke.
You're really good at that stuff, Amanda. I'm confident you'll handle it.
Of course I'll handle it, she told herself. Like I handle every other goddamn thing around here while you're banging interns and artificially inseminating Argentine polo ponies. Elias, I really need your full attention on this. I'm totally focused. So where's the speech? You're the keynote speaker, remember?
It's dynamite. I can't wait for you to see it.
By which you mean you haven't written a damn thing. When are you coming back?
We're four-wheeling out to the property in about 20 minutes. Oh, there's an In-N-Out Burger just 40 minutes up the road. We should grab a double-double sometime together.
I'm vegan, remember?
Since when?
Go to hell, Elias.
Just don't get bit by any Gila monsters or whatever is crawling around out there. And call me when you land in California.
Will do. Safe travels.
She ended the call, her blood boiling. CloudServe was her company, too. She was one of the largest stockholders. On paper, she was filthy rich. Unfortunately, she wasn't allowed to cash any of those stocks anytime soon. There was every chance Elias would crash the company before she had the chance to cash in.
Dom was one of those new financial geniuses who didn't see any particular value in the concept of corporate profits. That was just one of the reasons the price-to-earnings ratio on CloudServe stocks ran in the triple digits, thanks to aggressive accounting practices. In reality, it should have been zero.
Rather than profits and earnings, Dom measured success by cash flow. CloudServe Computing Services was a high-margin business with heavy capital expenditures, but as a separate division, it still ran at a profit. It was all of the other adventures Dom dreamed up, including his passion project, his space company, SpaceServe, that were draining the coffers. Dom simply didn't understand the word no, and his hand-picked board of directors didn't want to buy him a dictionary. They were having too much fun going along for the wild ride. Watson yanked open a desk drawer and snatched up a small bottle of essential oil. She put a couple drops on her palms, rubbed them together, and cupped her hands over her mouth and nose. She closed her eyes and took several slow, deep, lavender-infused breaths, imagining herself standing all alone on a sugary white sand beach beneath an achingly blue sky. Her breath slowed. So did her pulse. Her conscious mind collapsed to the singular point of her breathing. In. Out. In. Out. Slowly, imperceptibly, the rage ebbed away. A soft knock on her door jamb snapped her out of her trance. She opened her eyes. It was her new assistant, an Indonesian on an H-1B visa, her head covered.
What do you need, Masayu?
You have a call online too, Ms. Watson.
Watson glanced at her silenced desk phone.
Who is it?
Mr. Dom. He said he forgot to tell you something.
Watson forced a smile.
Thank you.
She took it. A joke he'd heard. Wanted to tell her before he forgot it. She faked a laugh and hung up.
She tried the lavender oil again.
It didn't help.
Chapter 41 Warsaw, Poland.
We are here, Jack, Liliana said, gently shaking him. Jack jolted awake, startled, not sure for a second where he was. His right arm instinctively drew back for a punch, but Liliana's smiling face short-circuited his instincts.
Having a bad dream?
Jack wiped his face. He was groggy as hell. The day all came flooding back.
How long was I asleep?
About 2 hours. I tried to wake you a couple of times, but you wouldn't budge.
Jack sat up and glanced out the window. They were in the forecourt of his urban hotel.
He glanced down at himself. The smeared mud on his coat, shirt, and slacks had at least dried.
Now that you're awake, do you want to go inside and get cleaned up, and we can head out again?
Jack shook his head, as much to clear the cobwebs as to communicate anything.
I think we played out all of our options today. I'll put a plan together tonight. We'll regroup tomorrow morning.
Sounds good.
Well, thanks for everything.
Jack stuck out his hand. They shook.
See you tomorrow. Say 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. Jack watched Liliana pull away before heading through the hotel's sliding glass door. A fashionably dressed young couple was coming out. The man shot him a dirty look, and the woman giggled as they passed by. The clerk behind the desk frowned at the sight of Jack. At first he wasn't sure why, but it suddenly occurred to him that he must look like a homeless guy with a laptop bag who had been sleeping under a bridge. Jack pulled out his electronic room key from his wallet and flashed his best used car salesman smile. Ryan, room 311. The man took the card, but was skeptical. Helped change a tire in the rain. Got a little messy, Jack said as the man typed on his keyboard. Jack's unsoiled check-in photo appeared on the clerk's screen.
Yes, Mr. Ryan, very good. Will you be requiring a dry cleaning service then?
Gee, Einstein, how could you tell?
That would be great. Please put your dirty clothes in the dry cleaning bag provided in your room and hang it on the door latch tonight. Everything will be available tomorrow by 7 a.m.
Thanks.
The clerk peeked over the top of the desk at Jack's feet.
Shoes, too?
Jack's brown Oxfords were trashed.
Please,
leave them outside the door as well.
Just bill it to my room number.
Already taken care of.
Jack nodded his thanks and headed for the stairs. He was wide awake this time, but he didn't relish the idea of riding up the elevator with anyone right now.
Before he did anything else, Jack locked the hotel room door and crossed over to the far wall fronting the entire space.
He reached down and pulled out the square wall charger he used to power up his laptop from the European-style plug adapter and brought it over to the desk. He powered up his laptop and connected the wall charger to it with the dual-use USB connector. He opened a program that accessed the motion-activated digital camera embedded in the wall charger unit that doubled as his computer's power source. The camera's tiny fisheye lens had a 180-degree angle, wide enough to capture any movement in the room's single living sleeping area. If anyone had entered, the camera would have captured it. The unit could even detect if it had been tampered with. Jack deployed a similar power camera unit for an electric razor in the bathroom. But no point in pulling that one up if this one didn't capture somebody breaking into his room in the first place. The program indicated that nothing recorded except Jack leaving earlier that morning and returning just now, the final image showing his lens-distorted hand enveloping the unit as he unplugged it.
Good old Gav, Jack whispered to himself, grateful for the bagful of electronic tricks Beery had given him to deploy on this trip.
None of them had actually paid off yet, but it was nice to have something to do besides ask questions that nobody intended to answer honestly.
Next, Jack treated himself to a hot, steaming shower. It had been a long day, most of it spent on his keister, either in the Hendley Associates Gulfstream or in Liliana's Audi. The bottom line was that he hadn't come up with squat regarding Dixon or any dirty deals she might have cooking with her stepson, Christopher Gage. Gage himself appeared to be moving and grooving on business deals here in Poland, at least with Stepinski, who seemed harmless enough, even if he was a pretentious ass. The steamy bathroom air felt good as he brushed his teeth, trying to decide his next course of action. The best he could come up with was to call Jerry.
Hey, kid. How's it going over there?
Jack gave a brief overview of the day's events, concluding with, and nothing to show for it.
Look, I didn't send you over there to prove anything. I sent you over there to see if there was anything to find. If there's nothing, then there's nothing. And after all, it's still only your first day. Give yourself a little credit. I still have a few long shots to run down. I'll check back with you tomorrow with what I have. Or don't have. If nothing else, I'll have a list of leads to chase on the computer when I get back. What's your gut telling you? You know, everybody dances on the margins these days. Companies allocate big budgets to their accounting departments to push the absolute limits of legality to avoid paying taxes, which is smart, I suppose. It may be that Christopher Gage is just playing by the rules others have made, and the fact that I don't like it doesn't mean he or his stepmother are necessarily guilty of anything. That's a fair assessment, but keep digging anyway. Will do. Jack pulled on a pair of athletic pants and a sweatshirt before dropping down in front of his laptop and composing a text message for Liliana. Any chance we can get Baltic General Services info from their last quarterly VAT tax filings? I'm thinking other businesses they might have purchased or partnered with. Also, any chance we can find out if Christopher S. Gage has formed any other corporations in Poland or that operate in Poland? I know it's a big ask, but I'm running out of ideas. Thanks again for the terrific lunch and the excellent driving services. Can't wait. Jack caught himself. He deleted "can't wait" and wrote instead, "See you tomorrow at 8." He drummed his fingers on the desk. He knew he was really missing something. But what? What about generating a list of every Chinese company operating in Poland and cross-referencing that with any Christopher Gage-related corporation? Then what? He'd have to dig into those as well. But without a warrant or some other legal authority to crack open their books, and that wasn't possible without probable cause, he wasn't likely to get very far. After all, if someone walked in Jerry's door and asked him to show Hendley Associates' business accounts, Jerry's likely response would be a swift kick in the ass and a quick call to security to escort the idiot out the front door. As far as Gage's American tax records, those weren't public documents. And if Gage owned less than 10% in a foreign company, he wasn't obligated to report it to the IRS anyway. Jack brainstormed for another 20 minutes, but wasn't coming up with anything. Despite the shower, his mind was still a little fogged. His phone dinged. It was Liliana. "One step ahead of you. I had been thinking along the same lines. I called ahead while you were sleeping. We should have a list of possibilities first thing tomorrow morning. Shall I bring you coffee?" Interesting. Why would she be willing to dig further unless she was now interested in Gage as well? As a favor to him? Not likely. She was a pro and a patriot. If she were interested in Gage, it meant she thought he might be into something that worked against her country's interests. If that were true, that meant he was working against the interests of one of America's best allies. And that was worth digging into. One step ahead. Sounds like two or three. Thanks for doing that. I'll grab coffee and breakfast at the hotel before you get here, but thanks. Have a great evening. The offer was nice and, no doubt, perfectly innocent. But it was his own wicked heart that Jack was worried about. He pulled up Isabel's contact info. Might as well drop her a line and see how she's doing. He did a quick check of the message conversation history. He last wrote her 2 weeks ago, asking how she was doing. She never replied. What few conversations they were able to have in between dodging bullets and bad guys in Afghanistan and Iran weren't exactly pleasant. She was angry, and had a right to be. He thought maybe they could patch things up. Looks like he thought wrong. Jack shut his computer. Might as well take advantage of the downtime and see the city. He started to pull up TripAdvisor on his phone to get a list of ideas of places to check out at night, but it suddenly struck him that he just wasn't in the mood. He sure as hell didn't want to hit the bar scene, and any museums he'd want to see would be closed by now. Besides,
He still had a shit ton of work to do on the Dubai deal that was still sitting on his virtual desk. He'd feel better about himself if he actually accomplished something for the good money the firm paid him. He decided to put in 3 good hours of work, and if that didn't settle his brain down, he'd pop an allergy pill and knock himself out so that his brain clock would reset itself for the task at hand tomorrow. And maybe, just maybe, he could get the hell back home and reschedule his trip for Corey.
Chapter 42. Luanda, Angola. It was the newest and most exclusive luxury hotel in the capital city. Surprisingly, one of the most expensive cities in the world now, thanks to all of the oil money. Built by a Chinese firm for Chinese investors. Expat Europeans and Americans loved it, though there were fewer of them these days, thanks to the regime change. Mostly, it was Chinese executives. It was the place to be seen for business and social contacts. Few Angolans could afford it. The young, mixed-race Angolan woman turned nearly every head as she crossed the expansive lobby. Green eyes, caramel skin, thick blonde curls, and a hard, curvaceous body flowed with effortless grace toward the private express elevator serving the penthouse floors. She waved a key card in front of the buttonless call device, and moments later, the mirrored elevator doors opened. She was a regular now. The hard, familiar